been a long time coming, but I know.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You know, the hearings from January 6th continue. They'll be broadcast here live this afternoon at noon. And is there anybody out there who believes, after all of these things, that Donald Trump is going to pay the ultimate price for the things he did? Is there anybody out here who believes that he's going to jail where he should be? Anybody who would have done a modicum of the things that Donald Trump did on that day, and the fact that they know that he organized it and called it into existence, and all of that damage and all of the things that transpired on that day, and yet people are saying, well, he should go to jail. He should be prosecuted. My question is, why won't he be prosecuted? Not that he should be. There shouldn't be any question whatsoever. Based on all the things that we see, all the facts that we know, and it's frustrating to say the least to hear people say not only that he won't be prosecuted, but the fact that he'll be in the running to become the president of the United States again. How is any of those things possible? You know, maybe our lying eyes have deceived us, but we know what happened, all of us. We've seen it. We've watched and witnessed the people who did it. We clearly know now. With the information, if we didn't get any additional information, it would be the exact same reality. We know what he did. We know that what he did should be punishable by jail time. But we also somehow know that we live in a nation that apparently is afraid to address this kind of malfeasance in public office. You know, If you're an elected official, and let's say you're a lowly school board member, and maybe I shouldn't say a lowly school board member, but you're a school board member, and you do something that is not right, and depending on what it is, you know, if you can be charged with malfeasance in public office and prosecuted for it. And the school board might be one of the lowest political positions that you can have, or county supervisor, you know, when you do something that's not right in public office, and not only are you accused of it, but it finds out that you've done it, then people are going to push, and there's a penalty for that. And you're going to not only be removed from office, but there'll be a scarlet letter attached to you, and maybe even some jail time, depending on what it is. And that's the lowest level of elected public office. Then why is it at the highest level of public office that we're still talking about what we know to be factual? With all the information that has come out, I don't know how many more of these we need to know that what was behind January 6th and the fact that somehow there are people who believe that Donald Trump is somehow going to wind up going to jail from this. I'm not one of them. I don't see any appetite. And it does show the part of our criminal justice system that is bankrupt. You know, the littler you are, the more you're going to pay for any crime. You know, I've seen people go to jail for shoplifting. Yeah, it's true. Well, they shouldn't have shoplifted. You know, the thieves, they stole. Yeah, okay, I got it. The call comes in, as some soul who was caught stealing in a grocery store, and because that soul who doesn't have any other way is hungry and is just trying to feed themselves in the greatest nation on earth, and they call in and somebody steps in, a security guard or somebody comes in and roughs up the person, and then they're taken to jail and then they've got to go to court because they stole some food. That's our system, and they're charged with it, and maybe they get some time in jail. But the wealthiest nation on earth, the president of the United States, commits all sorts of crimes in broad daylight, and we see all of that, and we watch all of these, you know, inquiries about what Donald Trump knew, what he didn't know, and most of us believe that he's not going to serve one moment. He's not going to serve one millisecond in jail. What does that say about our system of jurisprudence? You know, it's I'll be like everybody else. You know, I'll be watching the hearings and hoping and praying that at the end of these, because we know we're not at the end of it, that all this information that comes forth may not be what is necessary or needed to lock up a criminal that everybody knows is a criminal, but because the criminal was once the president of the United States, you know, he gets to walk. Excuse me. Don't understand it. And wish that the American people somehow had the power to demand that he pays the price for what he did. But again, I don't think our nation is strong enough and willing enough, and the justice system has the courage enough, which shouldn't even matter. You know, the justice system and having courage should not even be in question. But I do know, as well as you, that Donald Trump is not going to pay the price for what he did. And so the more we watch these things and sideshows, and more we get information about what took place, who did it and when, who knew about it, the more we become frustrated. Because, again, we know the average citizen has to walk the straight and narrow. And if they don't, then we have a system that is going to keep them straight, which I agree with. That's a system. You can't live in a society if you don't have, you know, laws that need to be followed, but nobody should be above that law or any of those laws. And we do know in the case of what took place under the leadership of then President Donald Trump on January 6th, clearly is a time and what took place that should always be brought up, and that a price should be paid, and he should be imprisoned so someone would never, ever think of doing that ever again. What are your thoughts? 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. And while you're at it, here's a story that I was looking at, and you know, there's so many things that happen that you just don't understand in a society. You know they're wrong. You know it doesn't make any sense. Here's a poor soul who he's a kidney patient, and stage 4 kidney failure. And And so he was facing this man, again, a stage four kidney patient, was tackled by hospital guards and accused of stealing a vehicle. Security guards. And I don't, something about security guards, right? Yeah, I've never been a security guard, never wanted to be a security guard. I get it that some guys gravitate towards that, big, bulky guys, and it's kind of like in many instances law enforcement, a branch or a part of law enforcement, clearly an extended, very extended part of it. But have you ever noticed a security guard's job is to look menacing in many instances, and they're going to make sure that they scare the heck out of you, and fear is one of the things that occurs. You got a security guard, they stand there, especially those burly security guards. There's also a group of security guards that wouldn't hurt a flea. I've seen women, small women, as security guards in places, and you just wonder, what's the deterrent when there's a woman 5'7" that weighs 105 pounds.
For Devil Radio, 92.7 FM.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. I'm talking about a kidney patient who was detained and violently interrogated by staff at the very hospital that was treating him for stage four kidney failure. Huey Robinson was a patient at Barnes Jewish Hospital in St. Louis, Missouri. He was dying of stage four renal failure in April, last April. He spent 4 days in the hospital being drugged and prepared for a possible kidney transplant that never came. In a weakened and disoriented state, Robinson was sent home, according to a lawsuit filed in St. Louis Circuit Court. After he left, the hospital called to say that he had forgotten his wallet. They directed him to park in the garage on Euclid Avenue and Forest Park Parkway. Robinson returned and retrieved the wallet, but forgot where he left his car. As he usually parked in a different garage, a confused, wondering patient was spotted by hospital security guards. Surveillance footage from the hospital showed the armed guards charging at Robinson and forcing him to the ground. Despite his parking garage ticket and patient bracelet, they accused him of looking to steal cars, the lawsuit said. Now, this is a man suffering from stage four, kidney cancer. He's in a stupor. He clearly is in the last stages of his life, and these parking security guards tackled him and roughed him up. And even though he said to them that he was a person who's been in the hospital and that he had these illnesses, the security guards disavowed that. So Huey Robinson has died of his illness. His daughter, Chelsea Robinson, will now be representing him in the lawsuit against Barnes Jewish Hospital for assault, battery, and false imprisonment. It traumatized him, his daughter told Newsweek. I've always known him as a tough cookie. You know, he's the man of the house. Of course he would push and keep moving on. But you know, I'm his daughter. You know those things you can tell when person you care about the most is sad. Now, that's one issue. I want to talk about one that took place in the city of Milwaukee this past Saturday at a grocery store. A gentleman comes into the grocery store, and he has a book bag. Now, this is really just not only a strange situation, but one that is heartbreaking on more than one account. A guy walks into the store. He's got a book bag, and he looks at, and he has drawn the attention of the armed security guards because he's got a book bag. Now, does that mean that because you have a book bag that you are a criminal? I don't know. I don't know what draws the ire of security people. I don't know what they're trained to look for or any of those things. I've never been a security person, never wanted to be. And yet this gentleman walks into the grocery store. He is a Hispanic, of Hispanic heritage. And apparently the security guards began to watch him. And for whatever reason, he panicked. The guy who had the book bag on his back, and his sister said that he had a manic episode, and he had an illness that he, when people would crowd him or those kinds of things, he clearly had some kind of mental issue. Well, he pulled out the gun because the security people were after him and fired a shot. It struck the first security guard and killed him. The second security guard returned fire and killed the guy who came into the grocery store with this book bag on his shoulder. Envision this, if you will. You've got a security guard who has now been killed, and the guy who came into the store with this book bag, who also lost his life as the second security guard shot and killed him after he, you know, shot the first security guard. What's so strange about the case is the family of the security guard is as angry as all get up, as well they should be, because they lost a loved one who was only doing his job. What makes this so strange is, as I was watching this on unfold the other day, the family of the guy who came in and fired the shot that killed the first security guard is suing for discriminatory practices, saying that the security guard's racial profiled their brother, and because he had this backpack and the fact that he was Latino was the reason why they followed him around the store in a discriminatory manner and led to this shootout. And so as the family of the person who came into the store with the book bag and shot the security guard is saying, they're going to sue because they feel like their sons or their brothers' rights had been infringed upon because he was a Latino. And so they racial profiled the brother. It is a strange, strange twist as you watch this unfold before your eyes. Now, that's something I couldn't take my eyes off of, you know, because you know that something is, well, both these men are dead. And so, you know, I don't know what's going to come of it. You can't bring either of their lives back. But certainly I'm interested in following this story more so than I am what took place with on September 6th, because I know they're going to come to some conclusion on what took place this past Saturday in this horrific killing of a security guard and a gentleman who came into a store with a book bag. You know, first off, it's easier to say, well, what is he doing coming into a store with a book bag with a gun in it? And so, you know, you never know. People lose their lives. They do some strange things. But anyway, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. That's 844-967-2789. You text us at the same number. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be back. Back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. You know, I was watching the news the other day, and I saw some children beating an elderly man just for the sake of it. And, you know, he was there. He was elderly, 73 years old. And these children, just a mob of them, I don't know, about six of them, 10 to 14 years old, they beat this man to death just because he was there, right? He didn't do anything to him. Can you imagine what it's like? A pack of jackals who went after a lion or some game that they go after. You ever see jackals and how they go about taking apart an animal that they're going to eat? Well, these young people did this with an elderly guy, and all I could think about was, you know, what can possibly be happening in the lives of children that they act in that manner? Here's the story. A pair of brothers younger than 15 have surrendered to Philadelphia police in the deadly attack on a 73-year-old man who was beaten by a group of minors, police said. Now, this is all on tape. It's all on film. A spokesman for the Philadelphia Police Department confirmed to Newsweek that the brothers, ages 14 and 10, turned themselves in Monday to the department's homicide unit. Their surrenders is the latest in the death of James Lambert, 73, whose fatal beating was captured on surveillance video. Currently, there are no formal charges. Updates will be sent as they become available, Miguel Torres, department spokesman, said in the email. The Philadelphia District Attorney's Office confirmed the two juveniles turned themselves in before declining comment. Further spokesman Dustin Slaughter told Newsweek. Police on Friday asked for the public's help, offering a $20,000 reward for information identifying what authorities called a group of youth who struck Lambert with a traffic cone and other objects in the early mornings of June 24th. The minors involved in the attack included four black males and three black females, police said. Now, these are all children under 16 years of age who attacked and beat this man to death. You know, when you look and see these types of things that happened, this situation happened somewhere around in the wee hours of the morning. Again, these children, 10 to 16 years old, out to 2 o'clock in the morning. What the hell is going on with families that your 10 to 16-year-olds are out on the street at 2 o'clock in the morning? You know, in the city where I live, Milwaukee, there have been times, recent times, that children 14, 15 years old have been murdered. This year, months or so ago, same thing. On the street at 3:25 a.m., 14 years old. What is going on with people that you have a 14-year-old child who's on the street at 3 o'clock in the morning? I'm 68 years old, and I'm off the street at, on average, you know, including weekends, you know, 9 o'clock. Because I know what's out there. And I don't understand what it is about people and their loved ones that they don't understand or have lost track of. Now, I will say this. That 10 to 14, those that 10-year-old and that 14-year-old are adolescents who are going to certainly go to jail or juvenile. They should not be treated as adults. You may say, well, they're old enough to do what they did. But 10 to 14-year-olds don't understand the magnitude of what happened. Not because I say it. It's because the truth of the matter is the front lobe of the brain does not develop until you're 26 years old. That doesn't mean you get a pass until you're 26 years old. You commit a crime, a serious crime, before that time, and I understand why people are going to be charged as adults. But in this instance, 10 to 14 years old, that's on the parent. That's on the parent for allowing those children to be out on the street at that time of the morning. You know, nothing good at all can come of that. But in this case, there were six of them roaming around in the city of Philadelphia and unattended by their parents. And whatever the cost is, whatever the price is, the parents should be the ones who, they shouldn't be able to walk away. Yes, the young people need to be detained and pay some price, but should they be the ones who suffer the brunt of that? 10 to 14 years old, what do they know? Look, a lot of what happens in the society and with us is the luck of the draw. People who are successful in life, for the most part, are successful because they grew up in a structured family situation where there was someone who cultivated them, who knew what it took to get the best and bring the best out of those people who wind up successfully. It's the luck of the draw. But there are other people who are as talented as people who make it in this society, if you want to call it making it, who had the same talents, the same gifts, but were born into a family that did not know how to cultivate those gifts. part of aging and gaining wisdom as we age in a society is to be able to look at those types of things and see it for what it is, and to then be able to express to those who are not aware why people succeed in this society and why people don't. Luck of the draw. And, you know, if you're fortunate to be born with a inside of a family that's stable, to live in an environment that's safe, and free of the dangers that so many children face in their lives, and you become successful, you got to understand it's not always because of you. Well, I did it myself. No, you didn't. You were blessed and fortunate that you had the opportunity to grow up where you did and have the people that you had in your life to help make you who you are. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back. To the last few minutes of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You text us at that same number. You know, in a separate incident in March, a group of teenagers was accused of carjacking an elderly woman in New Orleans and dragged her down the street for more than a block, causing injuries that led to her death. An officer said that when police arrived at the scene, they found the victim lying on the ground, unresponsive, and suffering from her arm being dismembered from her body. In May, an elderly man in Texas was shot and killed by a group of teenagers. They were harassing him. They got to the corner right behind me. They were messing with him. The elderly victim swung his cane at them, trying to get him back. Lieutenant J.P. Harleksha of the Houston Police Department said at the time. Meanwhile, in November, a woman was charged in connection with the death of an elderly man in Staten Island, New York, who was found deceased with a touch little girl's written across his chest. You know, let me ask you, Connor, you're a young guy, man. Do you see, or have you seen, young people, just wayward young people? You know, there's something going on, right? I mean, they feel like they're not, that people don't care for them. You ever notice that?
Yeah, I do.
So what is that, man?
I mean, I just think it's like, you know, I mean, personally, it's like, I think it's what you were talking about before the break, how, you know, some people are born in situations where they have family and they have a support structure and some people aren't, you know. I think that really affects it the most. And I think also just having a place where, like, young people can go and get that direction is important. A lot of people don't have that. And that's a problem, I think, with every generation, you know. And I think ours is probably more exacerbated by social media, making it so more self-aware of all of our negative traits and things, because we see other people and see, people of many different generations and people our age doing such fantastic, fantastical things, you know, constantly. Whereas previous generations, it was like, that wasn't as common beside like a child star, but that was it, you know?
You know, man, I created a nonprofit for those who don't know, six, 7 months ago, that addresses these issues,
yeah.
Right? I mean, we've got 200 boys, 10 to 15 years old, from the central city, who struggle, who don't have a man in their lives. And as we speak now, we're in week four of a camp that we have Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to noon, with working with these kinds of young boys.
Yeah.
And we put money in their pockets. And because somehow when we were younger, we didn't, there was more society support of young people and more families, structures that were strong and solid.
Yeah, and it was also easier for younger people to become more independent quicker.
Yes.
Like it was easier for a young person to get a job, save some money,
yeah,
purchase a house. Like that's really difficult, and it's been difficult for the past, ever since the recession.
Well, I'll tell you something, man. You're a very bright and astute young man, but we have a society that dismisses these young people as if they're not worthy and as if their lives don't have value. And the more we ignore what those young people are up against and what they face, the more we are creating this kind of a person, right?
Yeah.
Because they struggle and nobody seems to care. Excuse me. And people are wondering, what are they doing out on the street at 2 o'clock in the morning? Well, if they were born in the right environment,
yeah,
and the right families, they wouldn't be out to 2 o'clock in the morning, right?
Yeah,
I mean, there has to be somebody who says, "Stop! Whoa! Wait a minute! You're not leaving here," and that had to happen at very younger ages. We as a society have throwaway children in this society. And again, it goes back to whether or not we can afford to do what's right and what needs to be done. And what needs to be done is they need to create places where, you know, homes where children can go and their lives be cultivated. Because if you don't do something to give kids hope and direction and guidance when they're young, then why is everybody so surprised when a 16-year-old has a gun?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. Like, I feel like right now we invest so much money in the public education, but the problem with the education system is that it's directly for, I mean, it was designed to make it so kids can learn how to operate in the corporate space, right?
Right.
Like even down to going to class, being at a certain place at a certain time, having different clubs, having different electives. It's not just like a general space where kids can get guidance from individuals that can teach them how to, you know, function as an adult. You know, those things aren't funded across the country, like a general program, like a general, let's say, supportive adult rearing program. It's all focused on trying to learn specific tasks to work, to either go to school or work at a company, which is not, some kids, like, to succeed in school, that has a lot to do with what we were talking about earlier, your family, your environment. If you don't have those things, then being able to wake up, eat breakfast, go to school, concentrate in class, right, learn these things, that's never going to happen, right? We instead put general funding and lots of funding into the process, but we don't do it. And we don't put that funding into the environment.
Man, you are so ahead of your time and right with the assessment of what's going on. The times and the way children are educated has not changed.
At all. At all.
And it hasn't changed in my lifetime. And I remember well when I was a kid, all the way from kindergarten all the way through, and they're still trying to do the exact same thing today. And here it is 50 years later for me, and they're still trying to do the same thing. And it's not working.
Yeah.
Okay. And everybody's not the same. Everybody's not going to look at the life from the same perspective. And we've got to do the things that they do in Russia and China and other places. They look at children individually and they say, hey, wait a minute. By the time kids get to be 12, 14 years of age, they look and they see Connor's got all of this talent and all of these different things and all these gifts, and let's put Connor on a track that Connor will be able to be successful in.
Yeah.
But then there's Joe, who doesn't have the same talents and the gifts that Connor has, although all of us have gifts, but they don't have the gifts that Connor has. And they need to start focusing on, well, what do we do with Joe? What is Joe good at? Mm-hmm. And start directing Joe. Everybody's not going to the university.
Exactly.
Right? And okay.
Making it so you can just get a decent standard of like a livable wage.
Well, yes.
That's the biggest problem, right? Because a lot of kids go to school because they're like, well, I have to be able to, because I can't make a living wage off of working at Starbucks or something.
Right.
You know, I need to get higher education. But like that requires investment. And even if you get a job that pays salary, right, you're still in tons of debt.
Yeah.
So it's like, and it could be something that you didn't even want to do in the first
place.
Well,
we got to stop trying to make it cookie cutter and that everybody's going to college. They're
exactly.
not. Okay, and college is not the answer for everybody, you know. If because there, when I see kids, and I've been in the schools the last 12 years, and I see kids and they're seniors, and they're getting ready to graduate, and it's June, and they're getting ready to graduate, and I say, hey, what are you gonna do with your life? Oh, I'm going to college. I say, oh, you are. You've done nothing. Nobody's led you or given you direction and guidance all these years for you to be able to get ready and plan to go to college. And here it is. You're a senior now, and you're getting ready to be done, and you think you're going to college. All of that has to change, right, man?
Mm-hmm.
And if we're gonna make inroads and stop these kinds of things, our way of thinking with education has to change. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think the main thing is just making it so people can give value and make money a lot easier.
Right.
A lot of things, like it's really easy to learn like a lot of skills using the internet.
Right.
And there are lots of courses that people can take. So if there's just a way to convert that into, you know, someone being able to gain value to take care of themselves really easily versus now where you have to invest 10 years to become a medical professional, you know,
so,
or 10 years to go into law.
So, look, we got to run, but you know what I think, man? You know what I think?
What's up?
Connor for president. Yay! Listen, we got to go. Thank you, man, as always, man. It's really good having you around, young man. Got to go. 8449. Oh. What am I talking about? We're leaving.
Yeah.
I'll be back on tomorrow. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. See you later.
Peace.